During Lent this year, we are doing a contextual Bible study at Soulwork, as we call adult Christian formation at St. Bede's. This method of Bible study comes out of the church in South Africa, and it revolves around lively discussions of a biblical text. One of the things I most appreciate about this method is that it acknowledges that everyone interprets the Bible from their own context. We bring ourselves to every Bible study. Our culture, language, education, socioeconomic background, values, experiences. Everyone does that, even the experts. That's not at all a bad thing, because when we get together to discuss a Bible story with other people who bring their own context to the conversation, we may hear God speaking to us in a new way. Where each of us starts from has an effect on where we're all going together. The context that each person brings to interpreting the Bible is especially noticeable when the story is about families. Our own experience of family life will shape how we understand the text. Take the parable of the prodigal son. I am an older sister. I have one sister 3 years younger than I am, and to say that we did not get along when we were growing up is the grossest of understatements. We fought constantly over everything and nothing. The root of the conflict was who got more of our parents' love and attention, but we argued over who got to sit in the front seat, who got the marginally bigger portion of anything we had to share, and of course that classic of sibling fights, she's breathing on me. And there were some real personality differences too. Like most firstborns, I tend to follow the rules, while my sister, like most second children, is a bit of a rebel. We get along better now that we're older, but that experience of sibling rivalry is part of me. It's part of the context that I bring to any study of the Bible. It will perhaps not surprise you that I usually hear the parable of the prodigal son from the perspective of the older brother. This poor guy has never gotten fair treatment. Like a dutiful oldest child, he has followed the rules all his life. He has been responsible and trustworthy. He always cleared the table when it was his turn without being asked. When his feckless younger brother took off, he stayed on his father's farm, carrying out his father's orders, doing everything his father commanded him to do. He has worked, in his words, like a slave for his father, putting in long hours under scorching heat and biting winter winds. He has rarely taken a day off. His father has never thanked him, never praised him, never made any gesture of appreciation or approval. The older brother goes on working without complaint. In fact, that's where he is when the younger brother comes home. He's out walking the fields, checking on the crops and supervising the workers. He isn't even invited to join in the party for his brother. He has to find out about it from one of the slaves. No wonder he's angry. He feels unappreciated, undervalued, unloved. His father has never treated him fairly. To the older brother, the father's welcome of the younger brother has the cloying stink of favoritism. The younger brother seems like a colossal screw-up. First, he has committed the unspeakable offense of asking for his inheritance in advance. He pretty much said, "Hey, Dad, I'm tired of waiting around for you to die, so give me my share of your money now." Then he left the family, shirking his responsibilities and depriving the family business of capital. He has wasted all that money, a large share of a family's wealth accumulated over generations, and he has absolutely nothing to show for it. Well might the older brother ask, why does an irresponsible, disrespectful, immature idiot like this deserve a party? Why would our father kill the fatted calf to celebrate this loser's homecoming? To an older sibling like me, the obvious answer seems to be, Dad always loved him best. It always takes me a moment to remember the times that I have been the younger brother. I have made outrageous demands on those who loved me. I have gathered everything I had and traveled boldly to an unknown country with more confidence in myself than was warranted. I have watched my brilliant plans crumble into dust around me. My soul has been so hungry that I would gladly have filled myself with swill fit only for pigs. I have come to myself, recognized that the path I was walking did not lead to life, and started to travel a road of integrity and wholeness. And I have called up every measure of courage I possess and turned back for home, carefully rehearsing what I was going to say and praying desperately that the door wouldn't slam shut as soon as they saw me coming. For all that I am an older sister, I can act a lot like a younger one. And while it always takes me longer to sympathize with the younger brother, I can see his perspective too. What happens when the younger brother finally makes it home? When he trudges through the dust with rumbling stomach and legs faint from lack of energy? When he at last turns up the path to his father's house? His father runs out to meet him. Forget the dignified restraint a paterfamilias is supposed to have. This father sprints out to meet his son, robes flapping open and giving a scandalous view of his hairy knees. The younger brother can't even begin his carefully prepared speech before the father has wrapped him in a breath-crushing hug. The younger brother starts to say, "I have wronged you. I don't deserve anything from you. Could you please give me a job?" But the father speaks over him, calling out instructions. "Bring a robe for him, my best one, that purple one with the embroidery. Get my father's gold ring and a comfortable pair of sandals. And kill the calf we fattened for next week's party. There can be no greater celebration than this. My son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and now he is found." There's no mention of punishment or consequences. There is only the father's love for his child. But what about the older brother? He has been forgotten in the hubbub surrounding the younger brother's return. He refuses to join the party. The paterfamilias is supposed to order the older brother to come to him. Disobedient children should be commanded to obey. But again, this father suspends his dignity and exposes himself to shame to find his missing child. Instead of waiting for the older brother to come to himself, the father goes out to him. The father doesn't order. He pleads, cajoles, begs his older son to change his mind. He wants more than anything for both his children to be there. There is no command, no punishment for disobedience. There is only the father's love for his child. The father loves both his children extravagantly, irrationally, beyond all sense. The children don't deserve this kind of love. The father simply gives it. And when each son is lost, the father goes out to bring him home. Probably everyone has a little bit of both the older and the younger brother in them. Whether we are the dutiful, responsible, judgmental older brother, or the immature, disrespectful, humble younger brother, God the Father comes to find us. God is always moving towards us, whether we are turning to God or trying to run away. When we are lost in a land far from home, God runs out while we are still far off to greet us. Before we can get out a word of explanation or apology, God calls for a party to welcome us home. And when our own resentment and sense of injury prevent us from joining the celebration, God searches for us, refusing to leave us alone in our misery, pleading with us to come in. God loves us extravagantly, irrationally, beyond all sense. We don't deserve this kind of love. God the Father simply gives it. And when each one of us is lost, God goes out to bring us home. I wonder how that day changed things for this family. It may not have looked any different on the surface. Probably the younger brother went on being an irresponsible fool. Probably the older brother went on being a judgmental killjoy. But that experience of their father's embracing, seeking love must have done something to them. Maybe our own context, our own experience of love can help us imagine it. Whoever the person was who loved you, whether it was a friend, a relative, a lover, or God, I wonder how being loved has changed you. What did it do to your relationship with the person who loved you? Who did you become as a result of being loved? Whichever direction we are headed, God the Father is always moving towards us. The seeking love of God runs to find us, to sweep us up in its embrace, to plead with us to come into the party. Rest in that love. Notice how it changes you. And let your life be thanksgiving for the goodness of God.